It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome in. This is the Battleground State Report. Each week we break down what's going on in those battleground states that will determine who's president, who's in control of the U.S. Senate, who's in control of the U.S. House with Doug Kellett, Michael Patrick Leahy. I'm Steve Gill. And again, each week we try to focus on where these races are going to be determined in 2020 and really in 2019. I mean, Virginia is one of those states where this year they're having an election that they have off-year elections, as does Mississippi, as does New Jersey. Kentucky, I think, also may be in the mix as well.
Yep.
But Virginia is one of those battleground states where what happens this year could set the stage for what happens next year in that state. Right now, for example, in the state house of delegates in Virginia, the Republicans have a one-seat majority. There was about a 15-seat swing in the state house in Virginia 2 years ago when kind of the aftermath of President Trump's election caused a little bit of a back push. You've got the northern Virginia area that is so Democrat that has kind of swung that state purple to blue in recent years. But the Republicans have a one-seat majority in the House because there was one race that was a tie, a dead heat. If you don't think every vote matters, ask whoever lost that race, because it was a dead tie. I mean, if your next-door neighbor just didn't show up to vote, they cost you a seat in the state house, and they flipped a coin with the tie to determine who would actually take that seat. And by the coin flip, the Republicans took that seat and therefore have a Republican House Speaker, House of Delegates majority, and there's a hope that they can swing that back, maybe get a little bit more breathing room in the House, particularly in a state that has seen a governor get caught up in a blackface scandal, a lieutenant governor caught up in two allegations of rape, credible allegations of rape by women a few years ago, and then an attorney general who also got caught up in his own blackface scandal. By the way, Fairfax, the lieutenant
governor. No, I saw that.
Have you seen his campaign logo?
It's about rising again.
We rise, and the I in rise is like a phallic symbol. It's like, seriously? You're credibly accused of rape by two women, and everybody's talking about Joe Biden's new logo. This guy's is even more bizarre.
Oh, it's bizarre. I don't know what they're thinking. So, you know, it's interesting to see what happens each week. When we started the Battleground State Report, we thought, well, you know, it'll be interesting and see how it will heat up and change. Every week something changes. Now, why are we focused on the battleground states? Well, it's obvious because we elect the president based upon electoral college votes from 50 separate states and the District of Columbia. And nearly 20 of those states are going to be voting for Donald Trump no matter what. 13 of them are going to be voting for whoever the Democrats nominate, whether it be Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or Pete Buttigieg or Kamala Harris. You know, California, they're, you know, long gone. New York, they're going to go blue. So the 17 states we call battleground states, and I won't go to all of them right now, but it turns out it's beginning to look like there are three of those states that President Trump won by not a lot, by, you know, less than 20,000 in each state. But three of those states really are going to make the difference in 2020. That's what it looks like right now: Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Yeah, the Democrats are really focusing their attention on Pennsylvania. There was a Politico piece this week that said that the Trump folks are you know, really trying to gear up in Pennsylvania. They had not had that as high on their priority list as they do now, and they're really trying to make sure that they play a little catch-up in Pennsylvania. It's interesting. Florida is one of those states that has always traditionally been a big battleground state, and you've got George Soros and a lot of Democrat money that's pouring in trying to register a million voters in Florida to swing that state back into the Democratic column. And yet you've got Bernie Sanders, who is one of the leaders, even with Joe Biden getting into the race this week. Bernie Sanders, they've unearthed a tape of him trumpeting Fidel Castro and what a great leader Fidel Castro is. Doug, you've spent time in Florida. Support for Fidel Castro ain't going to play well with those Cuban immigrants, those Cuban generations who fled Cuba, who are a strong power play in Florida. That support for Fidel ain't going to play well there.
I sure wouldn't think so, right? I mean, and then you've got this week where Bernie's out there, you know, promoting the idea of convicted felons, even those of violent offenses. that they should have the right to vote. They shouldn't lose, you know, that opportunity while they're in prison, that kind of thing. I mean, does that really carry well, you know, with the American people? Florida being obviously one of those states. But, I mean, do really Democrats, by and large, like the idea of felons voting, you guys think?
Well, especially when he was asked specifically, you mean like the Boston Marathon bombers, Rogar,
right, exactly,
Sarnayoff,
right.
Well, should he get the right to vote? And the answer was yes.
You can't make this
up. Yeah, he was doubling
up.
Down on it yesterday, right? I mean, he was, big speech, and, of course, those in the audience cheered. But I would think your mainstream Democrats, and I think there are still a few of those around, would find that somewhat repulsive, right? That you'd have murderers, rapists, bombers that would be allowed to, you know, have their voice in, you know, the voting process?
Does it include Nidal Malik Hassan, the Fort Hood shooter who killed 13, wounded several dozen fellow military personnel? He's awaiting the death penalty. Should he be allowed to vote? I mean, it is crazy. And you have seen some of the other Democrats kind of back off from it and say, okay, I'm not sure about that. Not sure that's a great idea. Kamala Harris initially said, I think it's a good conversation. She indicated that she might go down that path. But you're going to continue to see, and we're going to talk more about it in this next segment, as the Democrats have to deal with somebody kind of trying to break from the pack with a new kind of crazy, and then the others have to decide, okay, do I follow that out crazy that guy, or do I try to find my own crazy comment to head us in a different direction? And the fight over who can be crazier, who can come out with more outlandish schemes is going to be what we watch, and whether or not when somebody pops out with something stupid, whether the others just finally follow blindly over that cliff, or say, whoa, even that's a bridge too far for me. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, battlegroundstatenews.com. Go to Battleground State News on Facebook, and you'll find links to some of the stories that we're talking about. And we'll be right back with more of the Battleground State Report after a quick break.
This is the Battleground State Report.
This is the Battleground State Report. Steve Gill here, along with Doug Kellett and Michael Patrick Leahy. As always, go to Battleground State Report or battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook as well. You'll find links to some of the stories that we're talking about. Doug, I always like to ask you the toughest questions. So,
well, actually, I appreciate you giving me one I could answer to start the program. Usually it's like, what do you think? Is Trump going to win this one? You know,
How do the Democrats in this pack of 20 or so, again, you had Joe Biden this week announced that he's joining the fray with his delayed by 24 hours video announcement. Apparently, they had to re-edit it, recut it, because you know it was supposed to go up Wednesday, and then they decided to wait till Thursday, and then he had a fundraiser. And then, as he's being called by President Trump, Sleepy Joe had to take a break over the weekend before he returns to the campaign trail on Monday or gets launched on the campaign trail on Monday. How do these Democrats that are all looking for a way to separate themselves from the pack not head down the crazy path to get attention that ends up not winning votes? Again, you can get attention. You can get clickbait. I mean, you can have a sex tape out there and people are going to pay attention to it. That's not necessarily going to win you votes in the Democratic primary.
Well,
how do you separate crazy from getting a vote?
It might win something in the Democratic primary.
Yeah,
to be honest with you.
Michael
and I thought that maybe,
I do not want to see Bernie Sanders' sex tape.
Bolshevik Bernie. Michael and I were saying the other day that probably the reason for Joe Biden's delay, you know, his announcement was he was waiting on his eugenics subscription to come in this weekend. But who knows? It's really interesting. There's so many people running on the Democrat side. I can't keep up with the names of them, but you're right. I mean, they're trying to stand out. How do you stand out from the crowd? You know, Bernie is Bernie, but I think maybe this the mayor from South Bend, Indiana, is a guy that kind of stands out.
He's starting to break out a little bit right now. But did you miss this, Doug? I know you've been waiting with bated breath that Congressman Seth Mouton.
Yeah, right.
Seth Mouton from Massachusetts has announced.
It was another one of those. I'm trying to. Is this the
who are you
campaign? Like, you know, okay, you're in the race. Who are you again? You know,
and how are you going to raise enough money to even be a blip on the radar screen?
And what's your what's your identity politics lane? Because the gay lane is already covered by
Seth Mouton is claiming he's a former Marine, he's the military guy.
Really,
there's others that have a military background, but that's his big pitch. I'm a guy who understands the military.
Well, so does Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah. So right? Again, that's
so
not
he's
exactly
got the gay
lane
and the military lane. He served in Afghanistan, naval intelligence in Afghanistan for 6 months while he was mayor.
Mayor of South Bend Over.
Oh, wow. I didn't hear that. But I will say that I think Beto's got the dental support, right?
Dental
the
dentists, lobby.
Yeah.
But the
so
key.
He's got
and the,
those,
and the
so
brewers,
I mean,
the beer brewers are all in for, Pocahontas. So she's got the Native American identity and, wait a minute, I got to get me a beer. So, she's got that lined up.
Yeah, that crowd. So the key, I think, right now is. Right now, as of the last weekend of April of 2019, now we've got May, June, July. We have 15 months until the Democratic convention, July 13th to 16th, in another battleground state, Wisconsin. Well, I think right now, when you look at this, the three states that matter the most are Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. President Trump won all of those in 2016 narrowly. If he'd lost those states and everything else had been the same, we would now be talking about President Hillary Clinton. So we have to say a thank you to all of those people in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania who voted for Donald Trump. But the question is...
The man from Scranton.
Yeah, there you go. You got it. He's from Scranton, Pennsylvania, Joe Biden. And does Joe Biden have the best opportunity, Steve, to win Pennsylvania of all of this crazy clown car of 25 and growing Democratic candidates? Does the native of Scranton, Pennsylvania, Joe Biden, have the best chance of winning Pennsylvania in the general election over Donald Trump?
I think he would certainly have favorite son status in Pennsylvania that would give him an edge over other particular candidates, that may come from California or other places. Again, if Kamala Harris is there, she's got the identity politics of I'm an African-American woman and yeah. I can carry California. Well, you're going to carry California anyway. It's not
they're
not
all
going to
carry California.
So can you pick up some of these other states? And Kamala Harris seems like she's kind of fallen by the wayside. Again, as we've talked before in weeks past, these different candidates are going to get their time in the spotlight, and most of them are going to wilt under the scrutiny of people saying, okay, let me look at this person this week. And they're not going to like what they see as they get to know them a little better. And then they're going to say, okay, who's next? Who's next up in taking a look at? I think that Biden is the more formidable candidate against President Trump as sort of an adult in the race for the Democrats. His challenge is going to be how do you emerge from the primary? Now, he has an advantage in that he looks like he will be, at this point, the establishment candidate.
Yes.
Which means that the superdelegates that the Democrats award to that are mainly their party chairmanships and those kind of people, that they will tend to be in the Joe Biden camp.
Right.
Bernie Sanders is attracting the socialist wacko fringe. They're going to be very dedicated and loyal to Bernie. And if they show up at the convention in Milwaukee for the Democratic convention the last week or so in July, and Bernie has been pushed aside by the establishment, by the elite, they're going to be angry. And you already hear some of the folks that are Bernie people saying that if Bernie isn't the guy, that we'll either stay home or we'll vote for Donald Trump out of spite. And how Joe Biden can navigate to not only get the nomination, but also, if he gets it, not have defection. Now, again, maybe the Democrats, maybe the Bernie folks will hate Donald Trump more than they despise the guy that stole it from Bernie again. But they didn't hate Donald Trump enough to turn out for Hillary Clinton 4 years ago, 3 years ago at this point. And they show that they're willing to abandon the Democratic Party and maybe even vote for Donald Trump if they feel like their guy gets mistreated.
So Joe Biden, Doug, is a guy who needs to follow the Nixon rule of politics for becoming president. No.
He's already there.
No, the Nixon rule is, at least for if you're a Republican, during the primary process, you run as far to the right as you possibly can. And once you get the nomination, you run as far back to the left as you possibly can. So in Joe Biden's case, what his challenge is, he has to, from today going forward, he has to run as far to the left as he possibly can. And then when he gets the nomination, he has to run as far back to the right as he possibly can. My question, Doug, for you, though, is anybody going to believe that Joe Biden is going to out crazy to the left Bernie Sanders or anybody
else? That's going to be hard to do. I mean, let's face it. I mean, there are a couple of, candidates, and Bernie Sanders certainly the most prominent, that, you know, you can't give away more free stuff than Bernie does. You can't I can't imagine Biden is going to come out and say, even though he might back off his vote on the crime bill years ago, that all these convicted felons ought to go out there and vote. But he did say, right, that he's the most progressive candidate in the race. He did call Anita Hill this week and apparently apologized for, you know, the Clarence Thomas hearings back in the 80s. She's not totally satisfied with
that. She's totally unsatisfied with that.
Right. But he did do that, and, you know, we'll just have to see how it plays. But there's no way he can out-give away free stuff, the far left, you know, with the Bernie supporters. I don't see how.
Well, and the Nixon model that Michael's talking about, you've got to stay within range of getting back to the middle to win those middle independent voters. And the Democratic Party is starting so far to the left of where America is. Again, you look at the polling among Republican primary voters, overwhelmingly immigration is the number one issue. Among independents, immigration is the number one issue. And yet all you're hearing from the Democrats is crazy talk and impeachment and investigation. And then you start moving down the left-wing policies of how far socialist, how much free stuff can you promise to give away. You can't go that far left and then find your way back to the middle. And like you said, Michael, can Bernie be out-liberaled by Joe Biden? I don't think it's going to be possible, particularly when you look at some of the other folks that are going to be looking for their trying to attack or attract their own attention. Plus, let's not forget, we'll talk about this when we come back, the bloodletting to come. It's not just, you know, what am I for that I've got to use to segment and separate myself from the pack, but how do I chop these other folks off at the knees? How do I hurt them bad enough to hamper them, harm them, where they can't continue on? And if they continue on wounded, what does that do? I mean, it's going to be a bloodletting when these folks start attacking each other. And how do they avoid that? How do they avoid doing harm to their eventual nominee?
They're not going to avoid it.
We'll talk more about it. This is the Battleground State Report. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, Doug Kellett here with you. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web. You'll find links to some of the stories that we're talking about, and we will be right back.
Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Again, go to Battleground State News, battlegroundstatenews.com. On the web, Battleground State News on Facebook. We keep you up to date throughout the course of each week between shows. We were talking right at the end of the last segment about how not only can Democrats try to find a way to separate themselves from a very large pack. I mean, there's 20-some running, Joe Biden getting in this week. They're trying to promote policies that will attract attention. And, I mean, they're talking some crazy stuff. And Bernie Sanders this week wanting to give the right to vote to convicted felons. It would include hundreds of thousands of rapists and murderers and terrorists.
Well, the natural Democratic Party constituency.
Well, they do know their base. But you can separate yourself with being pro-policy and what you're for. But you know, politics, what wins is you got to chop the other guys off at the knees. Mm-hmm. And they're already starting to do some of that. And the danger is, you know, whatever they do to cut up Joe Biden right now will stick. And when you think back, Doug, historically, some of the worst damage that has been done to ultimate primary winners mm-hmm. has been done in the primary process. I mean, the Dukakis releasing rapists and prisoners,
Willie
that
Horton.
Came from the Willie Horton ad came from Al Gore. When you look at "Read my lips, no new taxes," that was raised against George Bush in the primary. I mean, you look at how these guys get hurt by what attacks come in the primary that carries over into the general. And if I was a Democratic Party strategist, that would terrify me right now.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. Remember Pat Buchanan got, 30-40% of the vote in New Hampshire, I think, against the first George Bush. And all of a sudden, everyone talked about how vulnerable, you know, George Bush was. I think the for Democrats to win just seems to me comes down to a couple of things. One, can the hatred for President Trump coalesce behind one candidate? And two, who's the most likely or has the best chance to win? And will he put any sort of ideology, any you know, issue aside so that candidate can actually win? Again, I'm probably thinking of Joe Biden here. Is that, that seems to me they have to do that. If they do chop, you know, Joe Biden down to size, then who really is the, you know, the likely candidate that has any chance of really beating Donald Trump?
So, Doug, if
it and it also hurts, by the way, if they get selected as a VP nominee. So, again, you eviscerate somebody, you leave bloody, you know, body parts in the street, and then, oh, by the way, I like you enough to make you my VP. First of all, does that bring people together, and is that believable? But also, this guy comes in, you know, as a bloody mess, or she comes in as a bloody mess after you've eviscerated them during the primary process, and your two standard bearers are both so weakened and wounded that they can't take on a Donald Trump.
Well, in 2016, in the Republican primary, you remember Donald Trump talked about lying Ted Cruz, and then when he won the nomination, Ted Cruz wouldn't endorse him. And that was a big – but subsequently, Donald Trump helped get Ted Cruz reelected to the Senate in 2018.
And part of the Ted Cruz –
they kissed and made up later on, right? But it was a major event, and a lot of people thought that was a wound in the Republican Party that, you know, would really hurt Donald Trump in the campaign. It didn't. It could be because Hillary Clinton was so unlikable by so many voters.
Well,
I just wonder, are you ever going to see a situation like that again, right, where you've got candidates who are so unlikable that, that it works to the advantage of the other one, the one that's least unlikable, perhaps?
Yeah, I've believed that Hillary Clinton could only lose to Donald Trump and Donald Trump could only beat Hillary Clinton. I mean, they were the perfect mix for a Donald Trump victory. I mean, anybody else, if Hillary had run against any of these other raft of the 20 or so that were running as Republicans, she would have beaten them.
Easily.
No, I agree. And in fact, some of my friends, you know, we talk about, the primary season and this and that, and they're, you know, will say, well, you know, I wanted somebody other than Donald Trump to win. I said, well, when you really look at it, I don't think any other Republican candidate would have beaten Hillary Clinton but Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
Which is what you're saying right there. So, you know, it was a situation where you had these two candidates and you know, people were saying, there's no way I'm going to put Hillary Clinton in there. So is any of the candidates on the Democrat side, other than maybe Elizabeth Warren, that kind of fits that same category? Wouldn't she be the best one for President Trump to run against?
Well, in terms of being unlikable and lacking credibility, she checks off all of the same boxes that Hillary Clinton
did. I think Bernie's pretty well up there. I mean, he's like this angry crank that's 120 years old.
Yeah, he's gotten really, really mean and angry. He started off mean and angry. In terms of,
Reagan was a happy warrior. People liked Reagan, even if they disagreed with his policies. I don't know that Bernie's particularly likable.
He's gone from being the, you know, avuncular old guy to really a very mean-spirited attack dog in a way that doesn't really resonate well with people.
As these candidates get under scrutiny and feel the pressure, their worst impulses and weaknesses will be revealed. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the advantages of this long primary process. Mm-hmm. Their real character will be revealed. Not just the stories you can put out about what they've done in the past, but how they handle it will be revealed. And that's going to be, I think, as telling to people as anything else.
And Donald Trump, Doug, is well-known. Whether you like him or hate him, you kind of know who he is, right?
Absolutely. And beating an incumbent is not an easy thing. Doesn't matter who it is, right? I mean, the incumbent always has sort of the advantage. People will say, you know, we know what we have. They are either feeling good at the time of the election or they're not. But, even with Obama, you know, you looked at his approval ratings before the second election, and kind of, you know, would lead you to believe that he was going to be defeated, perhaps, if the Republicans had a candidate strong enough. But when it came down to things, people said, I want to stay with what we have versus try something else.
But Trump is a well-known quantity. I mean, people know his personality, his quirks, his the pluses and minuses of the guy. And what I've observed, just anecdotally, is there's a hardcore of people who just hate his guts and always will hate his guts. And if it's Trump, they want to go after him. They want to bring him down. But that is a... I don't know what percentage of the population it is. Maybe it's 20%, but it's not beyond that. Whatever the number is,
and you're always going to have that Democrat base that's never going to vote for a Republican.
Right.
So I'm not sure that hating him more changes the actual vote count. I mean, okay, when I go in and vote, if I'm saying, you know, I kind of like him or her more than the other candidate, my vote for a candidate counts just the same as if I really hate that guy. You don't get bonus
points. Yeah, you don't get bonus points for hate. Now, that's a very good point, Steve, because let's make a comparison that would be apt, which would be the hatred for George W. Bush in 2004 from the left because of the invasion of Iraq, et cetera. It was pretty strong. They really hated him. Does the hardcore left hate Donald Trump more today than they did George W. Bush in 2004?
Yeah, but it doesn't add vote totals.
I'm with you.
Again, you know,
how
again,
many
when
of
you
them
push
are there?
The button,
yeah.
You don't get an extra push because you really, really, really hate the guy, or if you really, really, really love the person.
They can measure the intensity.
Yeah, there's an intensity.
The intensity
vote.
In your finger.
We shouldn't bring that up. The Democrats will start be asking for that to be factored
well,
into
but,
the.
Well, they kind of
the
have in well, Maine I, with the ranked voting thing, but that's another.
You know, guys, I know it's not evidence, but you look at social media, and a lot of people are saying, you know, look, we knew we weren't electing a pope for you know, as president and Donald Trump, and yeah, we knew there were these things about him, but they look at it like that's not really what they're about. It's whether they like the policies that are going on and do they kind of like the direction of the country. And don't you think that's sort of in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, that's the decision that people will have to make?
That's a
no?
good
you don't
point.
Think?
No, I do.
Don't
I think
so?
I think you make a good point. And in fact, let me pose this. If we were to look at it right now, and I'll give you two scenarios. The general election, two possibilities in those three states, because I have a viewpoint on this. Which one do you think would be – which Democratic candidate would be more likely to win Michigan or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania against Trump today? Would it be Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden? What do you think, Steve?
I think the groper gets the edge over the crank. I think Biden has a slight edge. And I think, again, just this week we got the new GDP numbers, the growth numbers. Our economy is growing at 3.2% GDP, the highest growth rate since 2013, above expectations. As Bill Clinton famously said, I did not have sex with that woman. Oh, no, what the other part was, it's the economy, stupid. It's the economy, stupid, may be the key factor.
Yeah.
And when we come back, we'll talk about what impact the economy has. Why isn't it having a bigger impact? You got lowest unemployment rates among Hispanics, blacks, and others in history. You've got a growth rate that was told, oh, you'd have to have a magic wand to get there. Well, you know, the magic wand's apparently out, and Donald Trump's producing. Will the economy matter when people ultimately go and cast their votes in these battleground states? We'll come back and talk about that as the Battleground State Report continues. BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web, BattlegroundStateNews.com, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, Doug Kellett with you. You can go to BattlegroundStateNews.com, BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook. Keep up with the stories we're talking about. We're going to talk this segment about the impact that the economy can, should, maybe will have, particularly in the battleground states. Will people be voting their pocketbooks, or are all these other crazy issues that the Democrats are raising going to be what directs the votes in those battleground states? But first, asking yet another tough question for Doug Kellett. We were talking in the last segment about the animosity that carries forward after a primary. Again, the wounds that are created during a primary carry over. We mentioned Senator Cruz, Ted Cruz. What carried his animosity over was there were attacks on his family. They accused mm-hmm. his dad of being part of the plot to kill Kennedy. I mean, it was crazy stuff. And when you go after the family, it's out of bounds. Donald Trump carries a lot of animosity towards Mitt Romney, and rightly so, because the Romney people were putting out the nude pictures of his wife, Melania, when she was a fashion model years and years ago. When you go after the kids, when you go after family, you create resentment that doesn't get healed in a few months after a primary ends. So the question, Doug, is will the Democrats be able to restrain themselves, control themselves, and stay in bounds, or in their desperate desire to be the nominee, is it, you know, gloves are off?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the sort of the intangible with both Donald Trump and whoever the Democrat is, right? I don't know what else they could do against his family that's not already, you know, come out. Don Jr., I guess, they want to try him and convict him or something of conduct during the Russian thing. But I think, President Trump also, as you just pointed out, he doesn't worry about perhaps hitting below the belt necessarily. So, you know, it could go either way on that one, I think.
In a general, you can get away with that, though, because it's a zero-sum game. Either this person or that person's going to win. When you come out of a primary and you're having to hold your hands up on stage at the convention and heal the wounds and do the endorsements, if you do this in a primary, there's not enough heal time to get people back together.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm just trying to think, though, is there the Democrats among themselves, who are they going to, you know, be taking shots at? I mean, I guess I can't, none comes to mind here, right? I mean, do you, either one of you, come up with a family member that they would point
yes.
out and try to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you where the next, there are both Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden have huge vulnerabilities. Bernie Sanders has a vulnerability in the conduct of his wife. We've covered these stories before.
Right, but would the Democrats use that, though? I mean,
oh, yeah.
If it's what it takes to win.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Believe me, you're going to see the Biden campaign, you know, maybe not having their hands directly shown on this, but they're going to be putting out all, and it's, they've got a good story here, and it looks like she got away with engaging in fraudulent loan activities. She was named a president of a college in Burlington, Vermont, and they wanted to move a new campus. And in order to do that, they got huge, like a $10 million loan from a bank. The collateral put forward by Bernie Sanders' wife was fake claims of commitments from donors to participate. That was the collateral. The actual collateral, the number of loans she, of a contribution commitment she said she actually had, was about 10% of what was actually committed.
The only saving grace for her is there weren't any Hollywood celebrities who wanted to attend that second-rate school. I mean, she would have had bribe issues.
Third-rate, but nonetheless. But the point is,
did they even have a football team?
No. So she got a $10 million loan from a bank based upon allegedly fraudulent claims of security, and the bank lost about like $8 million on the deal.
And Bernie will be upset if you go after his wife.
Yes, but it's a good case. Now, they've put together, the U.S. attorney, I know shockingly, didn't prosecute her under
the Obama U.S.
The
attorney.
The Obama right. U.S. attorney did not prosecute her. But if you look at it, it seems to me it's another case of selective justice. If her last name were Trump, she would be in prison now.
Because of a parking
ticket in
1960.
District of New York would be looking at it, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's far more egregious. And to me, from the evidence that I looked at, it would be a very strong case to convict her. Now, Bernie and his crew of, you know, socialists are putting out a bunch of stuff, you know, claiming that she's been exonerated. No, she hasn't been. It was,
and
a
they'll be the ones attacking Joe Biden and his sons and his family members, and they'll be in the thick of that fray. The smart thing will be, because you mentioned, you know, who's going to want to have their fingerprints on it. I would expect that you're going to see the smear materials coming from, you know, maybe a postmark in South Bend, Indiana, maybe in California. They'll do the disconnect, the deflection, the muddy the waters of, hey, all this stuff is coming out of South Bend, Indiana, and it may be coming from the Minnesota Klobuchar campaign. But they're going to try to make it look like it's coming from somebody else so they don't get the backlash. I mean, it's going to be like – Star Trek three-level, four-level chess taking place, and it's going to make it even more confusing.
Yeah, that's where you get somebody in the race, right, that has no chance to win. You kind of get them in there, and then they start throwing mud around.
They just
perhaps
be the attack dog.
Yeah.
Right.
Just bring out somebody, and then, hey, by the way, you know, you do a good enough job, you knock this guy down, there'll be a cabinet post for you, or maybe the VP slot. What about the economy? The president should be riding high. I mean, the economy is on the flow. The stock market breaking records, the GDP numbers at the highest level since 2013, a number that Barack Obama was famously saying could not be achieved. Job creation instead of job loss. I mean, Joe Biden can go out there and talk all he wants. Under his time as VP, we lost jobs under the last 2 years. We've gained more than we ever lost during the Obama years. You've got Joe Biden out there kind of discounting the President Obama claim that you didn't build that. You didn't build that. Biden's out there saying you built that. We built that. So there's already an attempt by Biden to create a distance between him and Barack Obama. Does that serve him well to get those Barack Obama voters to get enthused and turn out for him? How big an impact, Doug, does the economy have in this race at the end of the day?
Well, I totally agree with what you're saying. I think the Democrats are not going to be able to run and say the economy's not doing well. They're not going to be able to hit the president on that avenue. I think the reason to try to answer a question you gave in the last segment there toward the end is why is it not being talked about more? Why is the president not getting a lot of credit for, you know, some of the deregulation, some of the tax cuts and all of that? I honestly believe it's because the president doesn't focus on it like I think he should. I think he focuses on all these other things. You know, he tweets about one thing or another, or who's on television tonight and this and that. And I think if there was more of a single purpose, I realize that's not the way he operates, but if it were more of a single purpose, I think he would be getting a lot of credit. And ultimately, you guys have been in campaigns and, you know, I mean, dealt with campaigns and such, that generally the economy is what usually makes a difference, right?
But they're going to have to tell the story because the mainstream media is not going to tell it for them. They're going to cover it up. They're going to downplay it. His team has to be disciplined, and it starts at the top with the same thing that the Clinton campaign did. It's the economy, stupid. It's the only thing.
So you're agreeing
with
me on this, right, Steve? If we were single-focused about it, I don't think tweeting about, well, the stock market's at the highest really means a lot to a lot of people because – while, yes, the stock market does affect, you know, everyone in some fashion, a lot of people don't see it that way, right? They don't see themselves invested. I got a 401k, but they don't really see the connection there necessarily.
Well, and the other thing that he's got to do is go to where the success stories are, where things have turned around. The Democrats are going to overplay. One plant shuts down one place because some company made stupid decisions. That doesn't reflect what's going on in the national economy, doesn't even reflect what's going on in the broader state or in that same city. Mm-hmm. He's got to show where the success stories are, and the best way to do that is force the media to cover it by going to those spots.
Holding again, rallies.
You're going to see more of that moving ahead. Same thing as I think with the border. When he goes down to the border, it reminds people what's broken at the border, and he's trying to fix it, and the Democrats are not. Those two issues, the economy and immigration, because immigration really is kind of an umbrella issue. It deals with national security. Mm-hmm. It deals with losing jobs, the sense of losing our culture, the violence, the crime. The immigration issue actually is a bigger issue than just immigration, and that's why I think it cuts so strong in the voters' minds, because, you know, they see what they want in the immigration issue. If I'm worried about losing my job because of illegals, I see immigration as a job issue. If I'm worried because, you know, I'm afraid that my son who's going to get addicted to opioids or something, that's still part of an immigration issue because that's where the drugs are coming from. So I think the immigration issue actually cuts across a lot of issues, which is why I would say the president and his team need to stay focused on that and then hone in on the economy.
And that's the other issue is, will the president's campaign be sufficiently disciplined on message to do that? I mean, you and I can look at it and say, yeah, that's obvious. And the campaign may be. The question is, will the president be?
Well, they can be focused, and then the president tweet about something else, and the media's on that, right?
Well,
yeah, I mean, that really is it, though, I think, because people need to be reminded at times about things. You know, we have a short memory in this country, I think. Sometimes that's good, but a lot of times, you know, it's not. It's like, you know, with, say, Joe Biden, let's say he's a nominee. Well, you need to remind people the economy under Obama was malaise for really 8 years, and Biden, you know, was sitting right there, so you know, it does matter.
Well, and I think President Trump is a guy that has ADD on steroids. He he is not a guy that's going to be tight in message discipline.
Yeah.
And again, to do a good job, he's going to have his team, and that's going to have to start with his daughter and his sons and those folks who will try to rein him in on even, I mean, he gets bored. If he says something once, he thinks everybody knows it, therefore he can move on. You've got to say it till people's ears
over
are bleeding.
And over again.
And about that time, it'll start to penetrate. He gets bored about the second time he touches on a topic, and message discipline is going to require him to say it till he's sick of saying it.
And the other part about that is, you know, how would you like to be that part of President Trump's brain that is his internal censor?
And even if you're
does he have that part of his brain?
No, it's missing. If you put him up on stage in these rallies and you have the teleprompter there and you've honed it in, it doesn't matter. He's going to go off script.
It's whatever. And so I think the thing to do is the way to do message discipline. I've been thinking about this. What you need to do,
Quaaludes?
No. What you need to do, it talks about people in proximity to the president. You need to always have about a core team of three or four people.
That he trusts.
And then they keep saying the message. And they have to have something new, and tell them, hey, this plant over in Wisconsin is getting, more business because of the fact of the tax cuts. You ought to say something about that.
But if you put it in his hands, it doesn't always work.
No.
When he was coming to Tennessee to talk during the Senate race, we wanted him to mention Fillory Bredesen, and he had it on his notes. He couldn't find the notes, so he said, and there's Phil, whatever his name is, Phil,
yeah,
Phil something.
He didn't do it.
You can't
even make
it.
It's funny you guys are saying this, but I mean, he's able to stay on message. No collusion, no obstruction.
That's good.
Yeah, whatever they're doing to get him to do that, they need to do it on the economy. Hey, we're out of time this week. In the meantime, go to battlegroundstatenews.com. BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook. We'll continue to keep you up to date and see what happens in this week that makes next week's show even more interesting. In the meantime, go to BattlegroundStateNews.com and you can find the links to stories that we'll be talking about next weekend. You have a great week. We'll talk again next week.